Get your paychecks up to 2 days faster with early pay. True story. Welcome to Huntington.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Week That Was. My name is Saeed Khan, and it is quite an eventful week. I would imagine not so eventful for us compared to that of a former president of the United States who has had a hell of a one. So we're going to jump into all of that with our esteemed group. We have attorney Steve Fishman.
Yo.
We have investigative journalist and columnist ML Elric. With his coffee cup in hand, we have columnist for Deadline Detroit, Nancy Derringer, and editor-in-chief of, from an undisclosed location of Deadline Detroit, Alan Lengel, still rocking the Detroit City represent. So,
yes.
As the creepy guy whose face melted in Raiders of the Lost Ark said, what shall we talk about? We have, of course, the search warrant, which was executed at Mar-a-Lago in West Palm Beach, Florida, seizing documents that seem to have been, and this is a word that hasn't been heard since, I guess it must be Edgar Allan Poe, purloined documents at Mar-a-Lago, dealing with former President Donald J. Trump, and it seems as though the information is getting weirder and weirder. The Washington Post reporting that one of the search targets may have involved nuclear documents. I assume they themselves were not radioactive, but they certainly were. And I hope that on the search warrant they put nuclear and nuclear, ever since George W. Bush has made that a thing. So where shall we begin and who wants to begin on what has happened and transpired this week regarding the search warrant? Let's go to the attorney himself, Steve Fishman.
Well, you know, there was a lot of misinformation, obviously stoked by the Republicans. But the simple fact is that when you start talking about Garland did this or this person did that or Biden did that, the truth of the matter is, like with any criminal search warrant, there's a federal, in this instance, it looks like it's a magistrate judge who has absolute authority to issue search warrants, has made a determination that there is at least probable cause to believe that criminal activity was going on there at Mar-a-Lago. We know now that purloining documents that belong in the hands of the people up in Washington, D.C. is a crime. Trump himself, the irony of this is fantastic. It was a misdemeanor before, but he actually signed something that changed it into a five-year felony, which I find to be absolutely hilarious. But that's really... that's really the simplest thing, the simplest way to explain it. All this talk about Biden doing something, Merrick Garland doing something, the long and the short of it, you have to look at it as any other case. To begin with, was there probable cause? Was the affiant, who was going to be an agent of some sort, able to put enough into his or her affidavit to convince a magistrate there's probable cause? The second thing that's most fascinating to me, and I saw it all over the TV today in the gym, is I believed when it first happened that they must have somebody that's right up there, right in there. And that is probably what's driving Trump insane. And when you see them saying, oh, we want it released too, you have to keep in mind, this is a criminal that wants it released. And he thinks like a mob boss, who he, of course, used to say, if they take the fifth, it's because they're guilty. But he's thinking like a mob boss. In my opinion, he wants to know who's the goddamn snitch. That's what he's trying to find out.
Right.
Well, it's obviously Tessio. Tessio's the smartest, right? I mean, that was
tell Mike thing. It was
I always liked him. Well, yeah. I mean, there's a certain irony, isn't there, Fish? That I mean, as you said, Trump went ahead and bumped it up to a felony. I mean, that's like Pharaoh with the 10th plague. It's by his own hand. Elric, what about the idea of classified versus declassified documents? I mean, I know that that's really something that's part of the news ether. Does that distinction even matter here?
Well, first of all, I want to know when the media is going to focus on the real issue here, which is Bo Biden invading Ukraine. When are we going to talk about that? With his computer and that stolen diary from him.
I think you mean Hunter, because I think Bo Biden is leftist mortal coil.
Yes, he has.
They want you to think.
Touche.
Bo isn't dead. Okay. He's working with Eric, what's his nuts from Holland, Michigan, who's crazy. The Steel guy.
Eric Prince.
Eric Prince, yes. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing that I think is great now is we're now in a staring contest with someone who thinks the other guy is always going to blink, where Trump wants to release the documents, where Merrick Garland has now said, we'd like to release the documents too, but you can release them anytime you want. We're going to wait for the judge to tell us to do that so we do it the right way, but you can hand them out anytime you want. And now Trump's right. People are saying, I don't know about that, but the classified versus declassified, you know, I'm no expert on that, but I'm thinking my layman's understanding is probably pretty good, which is classified documents you can't just put wherever you want, and declassified maybe you can. I mean, is it really complicated?
There's got to be a pile of documents that can never be declassified. I mean, I know that one of the arguments made is POTUS power says that he can go ahead and declassify whatever he wants, but there's got to be limits.
Some pieces I read today are not just classified, they're top secret. You know, these
double secret.
Double secret. Yeah. Top secret. I don't think he has the authority to declassify that, but right. I want to hear more from the lawyer. I saw it's Steve Sickest finger.
Yeah. The one thing I wanted to respond to ML is, when Garland's saying you can release the documents, yeah, you can release whatever documents you want. But what we all want to see, I certainly want to see, that affidavit. And they don't have the affidavit. I can tell you from my own experience, when they execute a search warrant, they leave the warrant itself and they have to leave what they took. They have to have a list of what they took. Nobody leaves the affidavit. So they don't have that. The only person who has that would be the government. And that's why they're applying. I think they're using the fact that Trump is saying, oh, yeah, let's bring it all out. But that's why they're applying. And the only person that can say it's OK is the magistrate judge or the judge who was the person who signed the affidavit. That's a distinction. There's nothing. They don't have anything, Trump and them. They don't have that affidavit. And they don't know who it is. Maybe they think they know and they want to find out.
Now, I understand that the Justice Department is saying if the affidavit comes out, they want redaction so that some of those names won't come out. But yeah, if a search warrant is served, the person it's served on gets a copy of the warrant and the search warrant return, which is basically an inventory of what we took. And as reporters and members of the public, we can kind of, you know, triangulate and figure out what they were looking for. But those affidavits are great. And I think the only time I've ever seen anything like that was in some of the Macomb County corruption case, where one of the defendant's attorneys filed a search warrant, a wiretap affidavit, and it got out. It was quickly sealed up again. But not only did you see what the feds wanted, but you kind of got a theory of the case, and you saw all these names of people they were interested in, many of whom were never charged and some of whom they apologized to. But yeah, Steve's right. If that document comes out, you know, that's the novel and the movie.
Now, what they'll do, so you know, what ML says is accurate. They can black out names, I guess, in this instance. Maybe they'd have to get the permission of the judge. But oftentimes in those affidavits, Todd knows this for sure, they don't have a name in it anyway. It'll say C1 or CI2 or something like that. But I'm certain that Trump and his clan of criminals, if they get the affidavit, even if it's blacked out or even if it says C1, they're going to have a pretty good idea who it was. And then, of course, if that name gets released, can you imagine the amount of people who are going to be after that guy? All these crazies that are after the FBI in Ohio and all that kind of stuff?
There will be quite a bit of doxing. So we have attorney Todd Perkins joining us too. Welcome, Todd. Hey. Alan, I see your hand going up there.
Yes. I mean, it's interesting that the Republicans made such a big stink about Hillary Clinton using private email. Imagine if they had raided her house and found all these documents, even after she left the State Department, found all these documents about nuclear weapons and stuff like that. The Republicans would be going crazy. And the shameful thing is that they're defending the Republicans. Some of the key Republicans are defending Trump without knowing really much of the facts, attacking the Justice Department, the FBI. They have, the governor down in Texas who's telling FBI agents, you know, basically, we know your agency sucks. We've got plenty of investigative jobs down here. Come on down. It's just It's a shameful response.
Todd, what do you think is going on here? I mean, you see this full court press of preemptively discrediting the FBI by floating it out there. People like Congressman Steve Scalise, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, all talking about the fact that evidence was planted and already now trying to delegitimize what has been obtained from the search warrant.
The reality is this: the rarity of this situation, and you know, how often do you deal with a case in which the president of the United States home gets the former president of the United States home gets raided pursuant to a search warrant? It has to be something bombastic. So, but you also on the other side, you have the resources, just like Steve knows from some of his Will Hill clients that you know we've had them from time to time, and what happens is they have the resources to mount a marketing campaign to discredit the entire United States government. It's almost kind of akin to where Dan Gilbert had a beef with the Fed at one point in time. So they preemptively, through Morgenroth, they preemptively sued the Fed, who was then in turn and ultimately negotiated some kind of resolution. This is a criminal. That wasn't criminal. That was a civil matter. But in this situation, they have the not only the human capital, they have the financial capital to launch these campaigns, and then they have the media channels available so that, you know, they're changing the court. They're arguing this in the court of public opinion. I mean, because the reality is, do you think Merrick Garland is going to go down there and raid the, you know, knowing what kind of blowback you're going to have and knowing the type of circumstances that you're going to be faced with, all of this vitriol that's going to be created, people talking about civil war, and not have something that is legitimate? But I'll take it a step further from what Steve was saying. I don't even think the people who gave the information, me personally, I don't think the people who gave the information are seeking to be not disclosed. I don't think that.
Steve, what do you think about that?
The racks, as they call them, they're calling them on Fox News?
Well, I don't really have an opinion about that. I got to believe, I think Todd's probably right. They had to know when they gave information like that at some point in time, their identity would be revealed. So I think Todd's correct. I don't think they're petrified for any reason as they're coming out. But this business about saying that the FBI is going to plant evidence, that's probably as irresponsible a statement as I've ever heard in my entire 49 years as a lawyer. I've had my run-ins with FBI agents, individual ones. I've had things where I thought they were too harsh in a certain case. I've had things where I thought they didn't handle it properly with respect to releasing things to the media. But when you start talking about planting evidence, that's an unbelievable accusation to come from a member of Congress.
I mean, you could see that DPD maybe, but not the FBI.
We're talking about Steve Scalise here, though, you know, so I wouldn't. I mean, let's just say the standards have fallen when we talk about a member of Congress.
But one would hope. We're also talking about Rubio's a senator, too. OK.
Yeah, I know. And so is Rand Paul.
When you start talking like that, I mean, you really are asking your followers to distrust the entire system. And then it's that next step to violence and what they claim is civil war. But that's an unbelievable statement to come from a public official who knows shit from Shinola about what's going on. That's what's the most aggravating.
Well, speaking of violence, I mean, there was a situation yesterday where a gentleman by the name of Ricky Schiffer, apparently in full body armor and an AR-15 in his hands, shows up at the Cincinnati field office of the FBI, allegedly inspired and provoked by the search warrant execution, then ends up having a high-speed chase, ends up in a cornfield, a la the end of Casino, and is finally neutralized by the authorities. It seems as though the causal link to the rhetoric is direct, is it not?
Yes, it's very direct. One of my schmuck contenders this week is Brian Kilmeade at Fox News, who in discussing the judge who issued this warrant posted a clearly photoshopped picture of the judge's head on Jeffrey Epstein on his plane with his girlfriend Ghislaine Maxwell, And, you know, but showed it for just a couple of seconds and didn't indicate that it was that it had been memed at all. The judge was shown to be holding a package of Oreos and a bottle of whiskey. And, you know, the kind of people who try to shoot up an FBI office are not, shall we say, sophisticated media consumers. And, you know, that could easily set off another one of these mouth breathing dolts. So I'm not surprised that this happened yesterday in Ohio. And I'm when you said neutralized, I think we ought to make it clear he was neutralized by a bullet to bullet or bullets to his corpus. But I'm not surprised. I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often, frankly. And it probably will.
By the way, for anybody with a deviated nasal septum, Nancy was not going after you when she was calling you a mouth breather. So just needed to go ahead and clarify that as well. But what about this idea that all of the Republicans have not only fallen into lockstep, whether it's DeSantis or Pence or any of the other great pretenders to the 2024 nomination, but the fact that there is a real eerie silence within the Republican bloc about what happened yesterday with Ricky Schiffer. Here you have the demonization of the FBI, but you also have by silence what seems to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, both Todd and Steve, almost an estoppel of the conduct, seemingly allowing such behavior to be seen as normalized or even a legitimate exercise of patriotism by the Republican Party. Steve.
I think that really what all of this shows, and there's been a number of really good articles that I've read either in The Atlantic, on The Bulwark, in The Post, or The Times. I think what it really shows is it's a lot easier to be a coward than it is to be a brave person, okay? And what the Republicans are showing to me, all of them, basically, deep down, I don't care if they've been in the military, I don't care where they've been. If they're tolerating this and doing what you were talking about, being silent when an armed guy attacks an FBI building, not talking at all about the kind of criminality that's going on down there in Mar-a-Lago, they're just cowards. And that's an easier thing to do than to be a hero or be a brave person. We saw what happened with Vindman, right? He was the opposite of a coward. He comes forward. Cassidy Hutchinson, she comes forward. These people are cowards, and I think it's about time for everybody to recognize that. And I want to say one other thing. All this talk about they're going to storm FBI buildings, they're going to take over property, they'll fight off the Marines, they're going to find out just what Schiffer found out yesterday. You keep screwing around with professional agents, professional soldiers, these guys are not playing around with them. And I think you're going to see a lot more of these guys wind up dead, like Mr. Schiffer did, than you're going to see him overrunning a Marine post. You know, let's see what they do against the United States Marines.
As they say on the internet, fuck around and find out. So, yeah. that's
where do you go on the internet, Nancy?
FAFO. That's usually on Twitter. That's how you save some characters that way.
Is that .edu or .org? So, one of the mechanisms of the search warrant, of course, was making sure that Donald Trump was not at Mar-a-Lago. He happened to be ensconced in Trump Tower at the time.
I thought he was in Bedminster.
No, I think they saw him coming out of Trump Tower going to the deposition that he was giving in the New York civil case, where about 440 times plus he invoked the Fifth Amendment. After, of course, excoriating people, saying that only guilty people will go ahead and take the Fifth. But here we are, the Donald seemingly having a very short long-term memory and having no problem with the contradiction. What is going to happen in the New York civil case? And do you think, as Rocky would say to Bullwinkle, or Bullwinkle would say, this time for sure?
I'm doing an awful lot of talking.
You're the lawyer. We're talking lawyer stuff.
So there's a couple things about it. Todd knows this very well. We've had clients of ours who were criminal clients of ours who get subpoenaed for civil depositions and something having to do with maybe something else, but also their own criminality. What we do is we call the plaintiff's lawyer or the defense lawyer, whoever it is that subpoenaed them, and say, look, it's a waste of time for us to come up there. The guy's going to take the Fifth to everything other than his name. Okay. We do that out of courtesy to ourselves because we don't want to waste 3 hours sitting around taking the fifth 420 times, and also out of as a courtesy to the other people who are participating in the case. From what I've read, they didn't tell the lawyers that. They didn't call the attorney general and say, look, he's going to take the fifth other than everything other than his name. So that led to how many hours was it? 462 times or whatever. They were probably there for 3 hours, and it was completely unnecessary. And I'm sure Todd will agree with this because I'm sure he's done the same thing as me. So that's the first thing. The second thing, which we all know, we knew it ahead of time, and now everybody knows, in a civil case, the plaintiffs can use that against you. It's not like a criminal case where, God forbid, the government should suggest because you didn't testify or you didn't talk to the police that you're guilty. So he's really, to me, he's cooked his own goose either way. Why they bothered to go there and waste all that time? Only a guy like him and his criminal and his lawyer, I should say only a criminal like him and his lawyer, whoever that is, would know, but didn't make any sense to me.
Well, Todd, I mean, he clearly got his soundbite for his base, right?
Well, you know, here's the thing I think about. I agree with everything that Steve says about how he and I would do that case. But I also have to think with a attorney general who is in line, who despises this individual, I don't think that even if Donald Trump's lawyers called, I think for the purposes of establishing an individual, just like you said, Khan, you said, look, he eviscerated people about taking the fifth. They're the criminal. So they wanted to create that platitude. They wanted to create that base. The Democrats, if you want to take it from a political perspective, the Democrats want to show him taking the fifth 460 some times, because this is not just about this case, which I think that he's going to lose the civil case. I think because the standard of proof is different, just like Steve said. But, you know, it's about taking down Donald Trump and his, you know, this empire that he's created of mindless, you know, trolls that just follow him, you know, like the Pied Piper. So what happens is when he runs again, there's a lot of firepower that any legitimate candidate, either from the Republican side or from the Democratic side, will have to use against Donald Trump himself. And I think that what they probably, you know, I don't know the history, and Steve probably knows more about it. I don't know if they did make that call and they did say, you know, why are we doing this? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I don't think that the attorney general would even want, I think they wanted him to show up for the purposes of taking that fifth 400 and some odd times. And you know,
Yep. Elric.
Is there any benefit for Trump's legal team to hear every question from the opposing counsel, even just by if we know we're going to say no, we know where they're going? Or do you think all those cards are on the table by now?
They know what they're going to ask. I think they're going to know what they're going to ask. And, you know, to that extent, I see what you're saying is, hey, we want to see what they're going to ask you. That might have some benefit. Yeah, but I think his goose is cooked. On the civil side, I think he might be cooked on the criminal side. I don't know what's in that search warrant, but you know, Steve, your client house gets raided 6 months later or 9 months later. What, you know, they got a complaint or an indictment.
I think that's a very good point. I mean, his criminal exposure. If I were him, at the age he is, the last thing I'd be worrying about is money damages and things of that nature. Number one, he can get however much he wants from his base by cheating the hell out of him, of course, but he can get the money. And number two, it's not fun from anything that I know about when you're in your 70s, you have to go sit in a can, even if it's in a Fed joint. It's just not any fun. It's not like when you're young and you can go play basketball with the guy.
They don't bring your special your special meatloaf.
I have a question for the two attorneys. If there were to be an indictment for all the election, interference and all that kind of stuff, would the charges of the documents, would they just stuff that in with all, like, you know, a 45 count indictment, or would they do a separate charge on that, separate case?
Say that again. I couldn't.
I was saying if they were to see there was a criminal activity down in Mar-a-Lago, would they, and they were to still do a whole conspiracy election theory case, would they combine the raid down in Florida with that case, or would they do two separate cases? Would they indict down in Southern District of Florida one case and up in, you know, D.C. another case, or how any idea?
Hey, Steve, you think CCE?
I don't know about that, but the answer to Alan's question is simple. The Florida case is not really a Florida case necessarily. It's really right. a D.C. case because he stole the stuff from D.C. and took it down there. The right. feds have a lot of avenues, you know, in terms of how they would charge it. I don't know. I think it's best in this situation. The one place we know what happened is in Georgia with him trying to steal those boats. That's a simple case. It's a Georgia case. Everything happened right in there, okay? But this stuff here, I don't think there's a problem with bringing the case in D.C., assuming they come up with the election fraud stuff, too, with the phony electors, because of the fact that the stealing of the documents took place in D.C. as well. But that'd be a decision they'd have to make. Obviously, if I'm the defense lawyer, I think I would prefer to have one indictment, because trying to beat two or three indictments, I can tell you, it ain't fun. You know, it's not easy. You don't beat too many indictments to begin with. So they may decide that it'd be easier for them if they charge it in separate jurisdictions. On the other hand, all the pundits would come forward and say, see, they don't have a real case, so they're going to charge two or three cases. We really all need to wait and see what comes out. I want to see that goddamn affidavit. That's what I want to see. So I hope that judge grants the motion and turns it over, and then we can come back next week or whatever, and you can ask us, and we'll have a lot better idea where it's going.
Well, Trump has exactly 3 hours to go ahead and object to the magistrate doing that. He said overnight that, yes, I have no objections to it doing, but apparently he said that about releasing tax returns as well. So how likely do you think at 3:15 p.m. You're going to get your wish, Bish?
I think, personally, if I were relying on the word of Donald Trump that it was sunny outside, I would grab my umbrella when I walked out the door. So anything that he personally says, I put no stock in whatsoever. And I think, unfortunately, the same applies to the lawyers, because he seems more than willing to move from one lawyer to the next, depending on whether that particular lawyer does exactly what he wants at that minute. Remember, he's a five-year-old. So, you have your five-year-old grandkid, and one moment they're playing with the peas, and next moment they want to throw the baseball. I mean, that's kind of how this guy is. So I think we wait till 3 o'clock, and we see what happens. There's no way to predict the criminal mind. I've been telling you guys that for 5 years, and I stick with it today.
Well, one of the best theories that I've heard is maybe the documents were buried with Ivana Trump, because why would a 73-year-old woman need 10 pallbearers? It clearly means that there was something else. But I think, in fairness, I think the coffin was gold.
I was going to say, maybe it was lead-lined, because it was truly nuclear papers.
Yeah, or she just wanted that much distance from him.
Maybe so maybe she wasn't in the casket. Maybe it's all documents.
I have a different question. I'm interested in what all of you political folks say. This is not one for Todd or me. If he kept nuclear-related documents and didn't turn them over when they turned over, what was it, 150 boxes or something, why?
Because he wants to sell them. Jesus. I mean, it's like...
To who?
Well, imagine what do you think? You know, somebody said today on Twitter, I did not anticipate that the LIV golf tournament would end up being a money laundry for nuclear secrets. But it's, you know, to me, it's almost possible. I could see him talking to, I could see him like sliding this to Putin, and then, you know, some months later getting an excellent
couple billion
price on a Moscow condominium fully stocked with long-legged Slavic models that will pee on the bed.
What about the rest of you political folk? Elric, Kahn, Lengel, what do you guys think? Why is
The most cynical thing is, as Nancy says, that, you know, that he would trade information. I mean, I think they had to be concerned about that, considering the low ethics of that man. I don't know, you know, maybe it was, I mean, there's just no reason. You're not going to write a book like citing all these documents.
He can't write. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you can't read. But, you know, so there's no reason to do that. You know, some presidents may say, oh, I'm, you know, for my memoir or whatever, but they're not going to put it in the Trump library, which I can't imagine will have many books, but they, you know, and there's other, as mentioned, Saudi wants to build a nuclear facility. Who knows what, you know, maybe he thinks if you give it to a friendlier nation that we have an alliance with, that it might be okay and that he'll get a payoff, or they'll get the loans that Jared Kushner was trying to get from the Saudis, or who knows.
What do you
think, Elric?
Well, first of all, I want to know when the media is going to report on Hunter Biden throwing Ivanka Trump down the stairs. I want you guys to get to the real truth there. But that aside, it could just be simply a case of Donald Trump was going out the door and he said, put it all on the truck. Because does anybody think this is someone who had his records meticulously kept where he could say, we want only the things in that file cabinet. The other file cabinet, that stuff we got to leave behind for the transition. This file cabinet is personal documents. This is stuff we might need. This is stuff that could be used against us. I think he just looked around and said,
grab it.
Well, I thought we'd be here for another 4 years. So
there is, I think, an element of plausibility to that, ML.
But here's the thing. It's been almost 2 years. He's had it. He knew what he had. I mean, because one thing about it, Trump may not be the brightest guy in the world, but he's not dumb. And at the end of the day, he has people around him who know what they're doing. So, you know, he may not listen to them all the time. Once he gets a little bit, you know, Steve, it's like that client, you give them a little bit of information and they run out and go do something on their own. That's Trump, you know, but at the same time, it's been 2 years. I mean, he knows what he had, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because I think reasonable person would have said, look, I took this stuff. I need to make it go away. It was not unaccustomed to having plumbers have to come to the White House and fish out papers that he's flushing down the toilet. So
right.
I mean, this guy knows what he's doing. I'm not going to give him a pass.
This stuff was all subpoenaed before the search happened. So he knew what they were after. So,
Syed, what do you think?
I think that he was using it as leverage in order to get some either remunerations for his heavy debt because his companies are not really doing very well, or to get some sweetheart deals for Ivanka. Remember, as much as he bashes Biden about China policies, he was able to score 18 patents or trademarks copyrights for trademarks for Ivanka and her fashion line. So what is it that they said in Casino? Always the dollar.
But also Ivanka's fashion line is no more, and I don't think Ivanka could sell her used panties on a street corner these days, because no woman wants to wear an Ivanka Trump original, shall we say.
Again, where you go on the internet, Nancy, via Fundios.
Sorry.
Did Frank Turner show up for the podcast? What's going on here?
Steve.
I'm sorry, I don't want to be the crude one here, but I mean, I just, you know, I mean, people despise this family. I mean, there is a small, you're right, there's a small base that you know, will give them their last dollar. But most of the people in this country find them embarrassing, repugnant. You know, there's a whole continuum of bad stuff. So, I mean,
There's people who despise him, and then there's people who Republicans will say, "Yeah, I know he's a jerk. I don't love him, but his policies were great. I loved his policies. He was a great president, and he does have a fan base. So there is room for
Ivanka Trump was selling cheap clothes. They were priced at the cheaper end of the range. You could find them at TJ Maxx. I mean, that's." You know, when they did close out. So it's like maybe she could make some money, but I mean, she was the quintessential rich girl looking for relevance. So, you know, that's
so the reason that I was asking you guys what you thought is that I'm still trying to figure out what it is that the person close to him said to the authorities that's included in that search warrant affidavit that helped to get probable cause. If, and you guys all seem like you kind of think it's possible that somehow he was going to monetize our nuclear secrets. Mind you, we're not talking about whether Todd Perkins is going to wear a bow tie or a regular tie. I mean, we're talking about nuclear secrets. If that's the case, I would not be surprised. And I'm not trying to predict anything, that if we get to see that affidavit, maybe that's exactly and precisely what the person close to him told the authorities. And maybe that person, male or female, did it because he or she thought, this is getting a little too fucking crazy for all of us. The reason I was asking you guys was whether you thought that made any sense. And it sounds like you think it's possible. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see something along those lines, if and when we get a chance to see the affidavit.
Yeah, so, I don't buy into the monetization. I usually, when people see conspiracies, I think what's there is incompetence. But certainly he's got a friend in North Korea who could use some help. And there are some people who think he was pretty tight with Putin. And he seems to have some accounts that we haven't frozen yet. So, I mean, there would be a market for things like that.
Well, Anne, actually listening to the show, said maybe the Saudis who might be interested in a nuclear facility. And that brings the LIV golf tournament into specific relief. But there's also this other element that it may simply be about selling nuclear secrets of our allies to our adversaries, essentially being a conduit for that. But you talked about conspiracy theories, Elric, so here's mine. I think that Trump was actually going to follow the example of Doc Brown in Back to the Future, and instead of selling the Libyans a nuclear weapon, he was going to sell them a bunch of used pinball machine parts. The reason why this is a conspiracy is because Robert Zemeckis, the director of Back to the Future, in fact admitted that Biff Loman was actually fashioned after Donald J. Trump. So everything happens in Hollywood. Well, a little bit closer
and,
to
and
home.
Biff Loman was the unloved son of a salesman,
was,
right?
That
so
was,
I think
that was,
he
yeah.
brought American culture right together beautifully. Fantastic.
I'm going to start watching movies, man. Talk about Purple Rain. That's the last one I saw. I mean, I just can't sit here and listen to this stuff. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay, Fish, for that, you're going to have to bring out your lighter and, like, just sort of wave it around, you know, because we're going into ballad mode next.
That was a great final scene. The guy had a Mumford Fizzed or Mumford hat on, if you remember, in that movie, too.
That's right.
You must have seen Beverly Hills Cop then.
Yeah, that was before Purple Rain.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You know, you're thinking Apollonia. We're thinking Felonia.
So here in Michigan, we do have our own situation with MAGA. Interestingly enough, the Michigan Attorney General, so we are three-fourths of the way there, has called for a special prosecutor dealing with a MAGA conspiracy case involving breaking into voting equipment, one that seems to implicate the Republican presumptive candidate for Attorney General for 2022, Matt DiPerno. It seems like Attorney General Dana Nessel has decided that it has to be a special prosecutor so that any kind of impropriety notions are dispelled. Of course, they probably won't be by the Republicans anyway. But does this thing have legs?
Absolutely.
Back to me again, because it's another law question.
Come on, Steve. Just take it.
Number one, she had absolutely no choice other than to request a special prosecutor because it would be impossible. I mean, seriously, with a straight face, to conduct an investigation against the person who's going to be running before office. That's number one. Number two, I don't think if they have good sense, they won't appoint someone as a special prosecutor who looks like a raving, ranting Democrat. I don't know what Jeff Collins is doing these days, but he's a Republican. He's a conservative guy. He's a Court of Appeals judge, former U.S. attorney. Appointed by a Republican. I don't know if he's interested in doing something like that, but there are other people like Jeff who would be perfect for that. That's whether or not there's a case, that's what's left of the investigation. I mean, when you start an investigation, you obviously have, they must have something going on where they've got witnesses who are saying that occurred, but that's why you have an investigation, is to find out whether there's sufficient evidence in there to bring charges.
I think that, you know, they might want to reach across the ways and go to the Ukraines and get a special prosecutor like Trump tried to get to investigate his opponent during the election.
Oh, you, Alan, you're just goading Elric to bring up Hunter Biden again. Still.
No, I'm waiting for the media to do its job and bring up Hunter Biden. I know
well,
how you guys are in the media.
Given the fact that we have invoked him three times and his dead brother once on the show, and you are
not
a part
really
of the
dead.
Media. Oy, I'm telling you, man, some weeks other than others. Todd, what do you think about this? I mean, do you see this as being an act of criminality that can be proven and shown by the special prosecutor?
Well, what we don't have is the specific information that they have in reports or 302s, you know, how much the feds have been involved with investigating this. So we don't have the actual reports that they have, but looking at it, and, you know, and I don't know, maybe I'm doing it like market traders do, looking at past price performance as an indicator of future price performance. You know, the behavior of these individuals in the past is indicative. They haven't changed. They have not changed. And, you know, these are some of the same actors under different color, under different names, under different color, you know, sometimes. But nonetheless, it is a situation where, I would hope that the attorney general would not be reaching again, because, you know, I have and Steve has had, you know, and been involved with this Flint case. So, you know, you have a situation in which you have an attorney general who really has been, from that perspective, sort of disemboweled on some of the criminal prosecutions on a global scale. That's an international case. So is this a saving of face to go after these individuals at this point in time? But a special prosecutor really would wall that off. And, you know, because the walling off that they tried to do in other cases really didn't work. So as it relates to answering that question, is there meat on the bone? You know, I think that would be something that a special prosecutor would find out and pursue that. But where there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, the behavior of these individuals has been atrocious, and they've operated with impunity because, you know, you have this, you know, there's a decline in how we've conducted ourselves. Even as I know Steve's seen it, I've seen it. We talk about it all the time, even in our client base a lot of times. But no, I think that there's something there. Whether or not they can convict, I mean, that's an entirely different story. You know, it's really going to be a look at this thing out the west side of the state with the kidnapping trial.
Yeah. You know,
it's about where you're at and about where you're going to try the case.
Okay. Elric.
I love to see the defense attorney say, oh, yeah, somebody's in trouble this early in the process, because you don't see that very often. But in terms of picking a special prosecutor, who picks a special prosecutor? I mean, do they go out of state? Do they go to, I mean.
There's like a professional organization, I believe, like the Michigan Prosecutors Association.
Would use a Michigan group as opposed to some national group?
Sure.
I think so. Yeah. I think that's what I read.
Yeah, they wouldn't go out of state. Ukraine.
Yeah.
Or Ukraine or Michigan.
I would think if it's a state prosecution, they most likely would defer to a state-trained a Michigan State trained lawyer. Now, if it's a federal prosecution, they can come from anywhere. But again, I think it's a state prosecution. I think it'll stay state. I'm assuming the feds might have looked at it and say, hey, you know, we're too busy doing other things. It's not something we're interested in. But nonetheless, you know, it is. I believe it would be picked by somebody who is of, you know, great stature. Because it'd be a very public case, someone who could withstand the scrutiny on a personal basis. Because, you know, these people have also, this is another group of people who have resources, and they can mount a cause and have the court of public opinion change people's minds about whether or not it's a good idea to prosecute these individuals.
Ideally, it would be a moderate Republican who cares about the law.
Oh, you mean a rhino? Yeah.
Yeah, a rhino. I mean, somebody who has affiliation with the Republican Party, but actually cares about the law and enforcing the law and
that's,
the truth.
That's why I said Jeff Collins. That's for
Jeff. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't hear you say Jeff Collins. He would be an absolute, yeah. He's a conservative. He's black. You know, he fits, I think, checks all the boxes. I mean, you know, he's, you know, whether or not, but, you know, I got a question for Steve. Is it so politicized that people would have, you know, you think outside the box, which is, I think, defined your career. Do you think someone who's politicized, like an attorney general, would take the, you know, I think it takes a lot of courage to choose someone who's not a Democrat. You know, do you think they would do that?
I can't. I can't tell you what Dana is going to do because I don't really understand half of what she does. OK, so that's that's not really the question. If you're a serious person, of course you would be able to do that. The other perfect person, except he's still sitting as a judge, would be a guy like Tim Kaine. He's a Republican. He's a conservative, but he's got absolute he focuses solely on the law and what's in front of him, and he'd be a perfect person for it. There's plenty of people that can do it. And I think that if you're thinking and you're a Democratic attorney general, what you want to do is appoint someone with Republican ties so you don't have to listen. You'll still listen to it, but people like Elwood will be defending you in the newspaper because he's going to say, really? Jeffrey Collins appointed the U.S. attorney by a Republican president, a Republican all of his life. His dad was a Republican, or a Tim Kaine type guy. You really don't have any choice. You appoint some left-wing Democrat, and everybody's going to go nuts on you.
Yeah.
No, and I think
I appoint Steve to be the person to tell Dana what to do, because those two individuals, I don't know if everyone knows those two individuals, but, you know, I didn't think about Tim Kaine, but, you know, you think about it, Steve. He's only got a couple more months. It would be a great segue into something, you know, for him to, you know, really ply his skills.
If you think that Dana Nessel would listen to one word I ever said, whether it was about the weather or Tim Kaine, you've got your head so far up your butt you can't even see.
Well,
but there are people who come down to your office you would think never would listen to what you say, but when their ass is in a sling, they're down there listening to you.
Look, I don't know what the fine print is on this, but it's my understanding that she asked whatever the Michigan Prosecutors Association to come up with somebody. And I don't know if she has veto power on it, but as Steve said, I mean, she'd be a fool to accept anyone other than a moderate, a Republican, simply because it's like the strategy that Liz Cheney is working in the January 6th hearings. She's not calling on Democrats to be her star testifiers. These are Republicans. She's making her case to her own party against Trump.
I think she does not have veto power. I'm almost sure. I've had this happen a couple times in cases of mine. Once the person disqualifies himself, and I'm not sure, there's an organization. It might not be the Prosecutors Association of Michigan. It might be that group that kind of rides herd on the courts in the state. I'm not certain, but I'm almost positive that if you are the disqualifying person, whether you're the Wayne County prosecutor like Kim did in Gabe Leland's case, you lose all control over the prosecution.
And
you know, it's up to whoever it is. And I'm just not sure who it is that makes the appointment.
Yeah.
And I think that the prosecutor, they kind of ask him, will you take this case before they get assigned it, which is why I'm curious if there are people who might not take it, people who might be ideal, like Matthew Schneider might be a great person to do it. But Todd brings up the point, Matthew Schneider is a new guy at a firm. If you're with that firm and you say, okay, so you're going to take this case, you're going to prosecute these guys, and we never get any more Republican business while you work here, I think there's going to be a lot of people who would be ideal and who are asked who are going to say, sorry, pal, I got a future, and this isn't going to make it any brighter.
I think the guy has to be 60 and above, or woman. I really do. I just think that.
We've got a clarification from Susan Moiseev. It says it's the Supreme Court that does the appointing.
Oh,
okay.
And okay. She's a retired judge. She knows all judges are smarter than us. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I was actually going to think that we've overlooked Kelly Services. I thought that would probably work pretty well.
Beth Kelly, by the way, would be a great person to do it. I don't know if she's ever been a prosecutor or not, but so Mr. Kelly Services.
So as far as the Republican Party's faring this week, and certainly their presumptive still leader, Donald Trump, the week's been a little bit different for our current president, Joe Biden, the father of the 1.5 surviving sons, Hunter and Beau, as Elric might frame it, who was able to have his inflation reduction bill pass the U.S. Senate. And it looks like he's headed for a victory on that. And at the same time, it also looks like inflation is not getting any worse in the country. In fact, last month, the report says that there was a 0% change. That may be a positive step moving into the midterm election. So what do you think about the political engagement of this? Manchin and Sinema, both seemingly coming online and on side for this. And also the idea that is this something that the Democrats can go ahead and run on come November?
Can't hurt.
Obama had a great first 2 years as president, and the Democrats got massacred. I mean, Democrats just don't do a good job marketing this. They don't get credit for being good with the economy. And while this is some good news for Biden, I think it's going to take so long for this stuff to actually manifest itself in what we see in our bills that, that, you know, it sounds good. It looks good. It may be good, but the best thing that I think Biden, the Democrats have going for them in the midterms is that the Republicans continue to devour each other and to seem more and more extreme with every turn of the clock.
Well, I think that I agree with that, but even more so, I think you've got a confluence of different things that are going on. You know, we don't know. I think this with Trump being investigated criminally with, you know, you look at the west side of the state, was it Pete Meyer? You know, because he voted against Trump, they knocked this guy off who was really I guess I would call him a moderate conservative. Mm-hmm. Maybe even a more than a moderate conservative, but nonetheless, he just couldn't tolerate what transpired on January 6th. So they use conservatism and race as a basis to get this black guy on the ballot, and is likely the presumptive candidate for that area because it's a Republican dominated area. But you've got, I agree, the Democrats do not market themselves well, and you have to look at and looking at market conditions. Does that plateau mean, because you also have to look at the other factors. They also had 528,000 jobs created last week, which were through non-farm payroll. So are those difference of events where you have a plateauing of the inflation and then the increase in jobs, is that enough to change the sentimentalities and psychology in the market to move people to get back in and not worry about what's going on with the inflation? But I don't want to run on. I saw Steve.
Yeah, Nancy, you had an au contraire look to you. So
I think ML and Todd are correct. I think Democrats are essentially like women in an abusive or let's say battered spouses. You know, our entire attitude toward these things is please don't let me do anything that will make you hurt me again. And you know, the Republicans have been working the refs with the media for the last 40 years, you know, so that every story has to be framed as a he said, or you know, as a they said, they also said kind of thing. And I don't see it. I mean, I think it's, you know, you were talking about what's the truism in politics? If you're explaining, you're losing. You know, there's a lot of moving parts to this bill that have to be explained to people to make them understand how it's going to help them. Whereas going to fill up their F-150, you know, they get a jaw-dropping number on the gas pump. That's different. But gas prices are coming down too. And, you know, who knows? Between, you know, the Roe v. Wade debacle, you know, this bill in Washington, the continuing, you know, finding out Trump was, you know, auctioning our nuclear codes to the highest bidder and some other moving parts. I don't think the red wave is going to be as big as I think it is.
Right. Steve.
Let's hope.
Abortion, abortion, abortion.
Yeah.
I agree with you guys entirely. Sitting trying to explain the anti-inflation bill or whatever they call it. First thing, it takes patience. Second thing, it takes people who've got graduate degrees, maybe, that are going to listen to what you're talking about. Yeah. Abortion, abortion, abortion. And the way to do it is exactly how they did it in Kansas. They use, you don't even have to go through the usual stuff. The women all understand it's an invasion of their body. But when you say this is the government taking away your rights, this is the government, it's exactly the same stuff that appeals to some of those people who didn't like masks and didn't like other things. That's our issue. Every single state, if they could do it 59 to 41 in Kansas, we can do it here enough to make sure that guy Gibbs doesn't win in Meyer's district and maybe beat him. And
you know,
Meyer is, there's a newsflash that Meyer is not endorsing Gibbs.
I was also wanted to tell Todd, don't be so quick to think that is it's a lead pipe cinch for the Republicans in that district. Right. That was redrawn as kind of a toss-up district. And one reason that the DCCC invested in John Gibbs is because they wanted somebody who would be easier for their nominee to beat. And I think that could easily happen.
Well, that's great to know.
Yeah.
Being a Democrat, but it's also great to know. And I think, I don't know if you all have done this as a story, though, you know, with the fact that we likely will have, if that's the case, then we'll likely have, well, maybe John James beats Carl Malinga, hopefully not. But there's likely having no African-American representation.
Right. Yeah, we've read about that.
You know, so, which is a self, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy about the redrawn districts. So
you should have heard Adolph ranting about that last week.
Grand Rapids is definitely changing its demographics. It's becoming a little bit more purple. There's a shout out to you, Fish. After all, it was the home of DeBarge. Another shout out to you, Fish, when it comes to Prince-esque music.
DeBarge could not kiss the hem of Prince's garment.
Please, you know, Steve Fisher is the only guy that I know that can sing the Temptations on his way to a dismissal in a courtroom. I you know, and then wait, have the judge singing back with you. You know,
you're right,
Nancy. I was just pointing out that, you know, on Steve's Spotify, if he had one, but he's got an old phone. DeBarge would probably come up in the same genre as Prince. So there we go with that. So we are at that point of the show where, Alan, you can take this away.
Right. Because I'm dealing with schmucks all my life, I know who a schmuck is. And I know the difference between a real schmuck, a plain schmuck, and just a plain regular schmuck.
Is that attorney Raoul Felder next to him? I think it is. Is that when Mason was getting a divorce? I mean, that's wow. Okay, well, it's Schmuck of the Week, and I don't think that there is a dearth of qualifying candidates for this. So, Nancy, I'm going to go to you first.
All right. We were joking before we went on the air that I was going to name Charlie LaDuff Schmuck of the Week, and I considered it, but a late arrival came, and my Schmuck this week is whoever at National Public Radio assigned and commissioned the interview, the react piece to Beto O'Rourke's outburst in a event down there. And I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. And since I seem to be the person who has the potty mouth this week, he called somebody a motherfucker during an event. It led to this standing ovation of Beto supporters. The guy was talking about the Uvalde school massacre, and somebody was laughing in the audience. And he turned to him and he said, "You may think it's funny, motherfucker, but I don't." And anyway, so NPR commissioned a piece in which they talked to a couple of Texas political experts who said that that was a bridge too far, and actually used the phrase "cursing in front of children and the elderly" as a faux pas. That he should not have done. So as an elderly person myself, or pretty close to it, I just had to laugh at that. So I think he was, I think it was a very real moment for him, and particularly coming from, you know, Texas, I would think it would have actually helped him. But that's it. NPR.
Should have called him an armadillo and been done with it. So. All right. Todd, who is your Schmuck of the Week?
I'm going to reach back, and he's the Schmuck of the Week because he's probably been the Schmuck of the Week of a lot of people a couple years back. But, you know, I think it was Malcolm X who's talked about chickens come home to roost. You know, John Bolton, you know, he was a divisive figure several years ago. And I don't think that Trump could even deal with John Bolton, you know, so. You know, was it yesterday or two days ago, he was the target of an assassination plot. Not that I'm looking for anyone to be ever assassinated, but I mean, that's kind of, you know, you threw that ball out there of hate, vitriol and lies. And it's really has come full circle. Now he's talking about United States stopping your talks with Iran on nuclear deals. And, you know, it's really for your own self-preservation or your own anger as a result of what you put out there a couple of years ago and probably your entire professional career that you've been doing. So yeah, he's a schmuck then and he's a schmuck now, and you know, he'll be a schmuck in damnation.
Born schmuck.
You gotta wonder if Trump maybe told the Iranians what is his 20 is at any given time. All right. All right. Elric, who's your schmuck?
Well, I think you know, to pick up on a point Todd made a minute ago, it turns out we may have two black members of Congress from Michigan, but it's going to be Alan Keyes and Clarence Thomas. So, you know, that's just not going to be good enough. Yeah. And that remains to be seen, because Meyer did barely win last time, and that district has been redrawn. But for my schmuck, I'm going to Arizona, which I know does not narrow it down. But I'm going with Kirsten Sinema, who has held up the Democratic agenda ever since Democrats took control of the Senate. Finally, they get a major piece of legislation, and she's not a problem, except for one thing. She wants to make sure that all these equity traders get the tax loophole protected so they don't pay their fair share of taxes. And she says, if we will preserve that, then I will for once stop being an obstructionist. I will stop being Joe Manchin's work girlfriend, and I'll get out of the way so we can make some progress. Now, when she's asked, why do you want to protect these fat cats who are getting this big tax break? She won't answer. But Open Secrets found out that she's received $2.2 million in contributions from people who will benefit from this tax loophole, which, by the way, even Republicans want to get rid of. So, Kirsten Sinema, other than the fact that you've been raiding Sally Jesse Raphael's wardrobe, you're my geek of the week.
Yes, do not for any moment think that our pop culture references are confined by a single decade. All right. Fish.
Well, the first thing I just want you to know that when Beto said what he said, when we were at Mumford, if the guy called you motherfucker, you'd look at him and say, wait a minute, Mr. Motherfucker. Otherwise, you got to get your hands up and start fighting. So point that out. My schmuck of the week is Marco Rubio. Not only because of his commentary when the raid occurred, but he was quoted, I read it in the Post today, his biggest complaint of all things, why was not I, Marco Rubio, told about this ahead of time? Because I happen to be a member of the Senate Judiciary, or whatever the hell he's a member of. He actually said this for public consumption, that somehow he, out of everybody in the world, should have had private knowledge of a search warrant about to be executed at his totem, his guy who he just worships these days, even though he kind of shit on him back when they were running against each other. No. But he really honestly said that. And I looked at it and I said, you know what? All of our other candidates, you have beat him easy with that statement. So
yeah,
you're the schmuck.
That's a good one.
I think even Beyonce had dibs on it over him. But anyway, Alan.
I'm going to say Kevin McCarthy, who has put a shot, has warned once the Republicans take over, he said, Merrick Garland, you better save your documents because we are coming to investigate you. We're going to have hearings on this. I mean, the Republicans have no respect for the legal system. And they're just basically saying, if you mess with one of ours, regardless of how legitimate it is, we're coming after you. And I think if the Republicans take over the House, we are in for just a total, as Charlie LaDuff would say, shit show.
Hey, so they're finally going to give Merrick Garland a hearing in Congress? Hey, we've been waiting for that.
Well, that dovetails Giuliani saying that we're going to go ahead and raid Biden's house once we're back in power. So, you know, it's definitely tit for tat. Okay, so my schmuck of the week is actually the Bible Baptist Academy of DeQuincy, Louisiana.
Wow.
Who thought 2 days before the start of term that they were going to kick out a 5-year-old kindergarten student from the school because she has same-sex parents. Zoe Parker was orphaned when her father died in a workplace accident in September of 2020. She'd already lost her mother, so she was being raised by her aunt Jenny and her partner Emily, who then adopted Zoe as their own. The principal's office then informs the Parkers that Zoe could no longer attend the school because of the family's quote-unquote lifestyle choices. The school issued the following statement. Yes. Quote, the school is committed to instructing and living in accordance with the teachings of Scripture. As a Baptist academy, we are also committed to provide an environment that is consistent with the beliefs that we hold. We want our students to not only know our beliefs, but we want them to see them as well. Regarding personal relationships, we hold that those relationships, whether in dating or in marriage, should be between a man and a woman. I'm not sure five-year-olds date, and I'm pretty sure even in Louisiana, they can't get married. But here we go. The Bible Baptist Academy, you are my schmuck of the week of keeping a five-year-old out because of your own dogmatic beliefs.
That is amazing.
Anyway, isn't it? And the other one, the runner-up was Alex Jones sending an intimate photo of his wife to Roger Stone, possibly in violation of state law.
But, oh my God, you're kidding. Yeah. He broke the law? Wow. Yeah.
So he's morally bankrupt too?
Yeah.
Who would have known?
Well played, sir. Okay, that wraps up the week that was. Thank you, ML Elric. Thank you, Todd Perkins. Thank you, Steve Fishman. Thank you, Nancy Derringer. And with thanks and over to the final word, Alan.
Drive home safely.
Have a great week. Have a great weekend, everybody.